I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Governor Jay Inslee and Democrats are in damage control as criticism of their Climate Commitment Act mounts. Plus, a new bill could send you to jail for using gas-powered leaf blowers. Also, an unbelievable perspective on the landlord-tenant debate. And after the resignation of UPenn's president, could we see a turning point in higher education? That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I've never seen something quite like the press conference held this morning by Governor Jay Inslee and legislative Democrats. They are in a spiral. They are in a spiral of damage control over months of mounting criticism about their Climate Commitment Act, about the lies surrounding it, the cover-up surrounding it, about the impact it's having on working-class Washingtonians. Now, it's pretty normal this time of year, if you're a follower of the news or politics in Washington state, to start hearing from both Democrats and Republicans about what their priorities are going to be in the upcoming legislative session, which begins in January. It's pretty normal for them to go out to talk about some of their priorities, some of where they want spending to go. And it's also not a surprise that for Democrats, that includes climate issues and the environment. And especially now, for them to be prioritizing it is not a surprise. We have an initiative that's going on in Washington state that would repeal the Climate Commitment Act in its current form, which has been a baby of Governor Jay Inslee's. It has been something that he tried to get passed for years. Finally, it went through. I call it a carbon tax. It's increasing prices at the pump. But it's not a surprise that Governor Jay Inslee specifically is out there trying to convince people, don't sign that initiative, even if he's not saying that in black and white, trying to convince people that the Climate Commitment Act that they get billions of dollars from is a good thing for Washington. But the reason I say that I haven't seen anything quite like this is this was a dog and pony show that was really designed to try to improve public sentiment around the Climate Commitment Act. So this event, let me just paint a picture of it for you. It was held at Miller Community Center in Seattle. Governor Jay Inslee, with a bunch of children behind him, bunch of his political allies, Democrats in Olympia behind him, people with these signs about protecting the climate and the environment. Governor Inslee is going around before he comes on screen. He's shaking hands with all the children. And I'll tell you, when I first started watching this, this came across as a campaign rally. This came across as a campaign event. There is no doubt in my mind this was a carefully orchestrated event to try to shift public opinion, which has been going against the governor on the Climate Commitment Act and the repercussions of it. So I'm going to play for you. Look, if you're watching this first 20 minutes of the show today, this is going to be a blow-by-blow analysis, a detailed analysis of what Democrats are saying about their climate goals and the truth behind those climate goals, what they're saying about the impacts of their climate programs and the truth about the impacts of their climate programs. So if you care about that, stick with us. So at this press conference, aka campaign rally, was State Senator Joe Wynn, who has been a big backer of the Climate Commitment Act. And he said, and one of the efforts that he's endeavoring this legislative session is to try to hold big oil accountable for what? Price gouging?
This is a fight for our future. This is a fight for our kids' future. And just like we hold ourselves accountable and just like we hold our kids accountable, big oil should be held accountable for their actions as well.
Just like we hold ourselves accountable, big oil should be held accountable. What level of accountability has there been for the lies and concealment and cover-ups around the Climate Commitment Act? When have Democrats in Olympia held themselves accountable for that? When has Governor Jay Inslee held himself accountable for the fact that his climate goals that he's put forth, that he's paraded around the world talking about, have never been met? Where's the accountability for the fact that carbon emissions are actually up? Where's the accountability for the fact that in the 11 years Governor Inslee has been governor, recycling is actually down? So State Senator Joe Wynn says, just as we hold ourselves accountable, big oil needs to be held accountable. For what? For passing on costs that you put on them as the government. They're for-profit businesses. If you make it more expensive for them to do business, they're going to pass those costs along to consumers. If you try to hold every private enterprise responsible for passing costs along to consumers, that's going to get real confusing real fast and really bad for our economy really fast. Also present was Representative Beth Dolio, who used it as an opportunity to praise Governor Jay Inslee for the good work he's done on the environment.
Thanks to Governor Inslee's leadership over the past few years, Washington State has created some of the most ambitious climate policy in the world. It is really amazing.
Sure, Governor Jay Inslee has talked about some of the most ambitious climate policy in the world, but all of it has fallen short of the goals that he imposed on himself in the state of Washington. This isn't coming from me. The King 5 investigators had just done a report on that, that the governor's key climate goals have not only not been met, but a government website that was the governor's brainchild when he first took office to hold himself accountable to those goals, that website started scrubbing information about the goals. So you and I couldn't even go look and easily access what the goals are and see the fact that he's not meeting them. There's nothing praiseworthy about that. There's nothing praiseworthy about a governor who has for the last 20 years made climate his thing, gone around the world, putting himself out there as the climate governor, as the climate presidential candidate, making everyone believe that he's improving the environment when the goals he set for himself are far from being met, if not impossible to meet. Yeah, sure, I could throw out some goal like, hey, we're going to have no gas-powered vehicles by 2025 in the whole world ever. People like, would they be like, wow, Brandy, wow, she really cares about the environment. You can't just throw out goals that you're not going to be able to meet and that you're not meeting despite getting billions and billions of dollars in revenue. You can't just throw it out and expect people to praise you. Yet there's this whole segment of people who claims to care about the environment that praises him for completely empty promises and goals. It makes no sense to me. And that's why, again, to have Rep. Beth Dolio out there praising Governor Jay Inslee for goals that he's not even meeting reads as a campaign event to change public opinion in the governor's favor. Beth Dolio went on to say that, this is going to be expensive. You know, doing this sort of difficult work and these difficult goals, it costs money.
It's no longer free to pollute in Washington State.
It's no longer free to pollute in Washington State. Yeah, we're aware of that. We're aware of that because your efforts to reduce pollution are hurting working class people in Washington State. Your efforts that you say are about big bad oil and making them pay for their pollution, they are passing that along to the people who are least able to pay. Again, the idea that a private company of any kind would absorb all the costs that the government is thrusting upon them is a fantasy. It is a fantasy. That's not the way our economy works. So as you stand up there and brag about it's no longer free to pollute in Washington State, you are celebrating your whims and desires that are coming on the backs of working class Washingtonians. And it's kind of embarrassing, I'll be honest. It's a little cringy to see you do that. Now, Governor Jay Inslee, who also spoke at this event, he was talking about all the money they're bringing in from the Climate Commitment Act, all the money that they're getting, which, remember, is coming from you. Big oil, they're getting that money. They might be paying it at these carbon auctions, but they're getting it back from working class people. They're getting it back from you and I. And Governor Jay Inslee is aware of that, but he spins it as a positive, and really it's an acknowledgement that this is socialism.
This money is recycled where it should be recycled, which are hardworking Washingtonians.
So you take money from hardworking Washingtonians, and in the governor's words, recycle it to other hardworking Washingtonians? So you take from the poor and the middle class and give to the poor and the middle class, or you could just let them keep their own money. You could just stop taxing them to death. The governor also goes on to say, and this is just an example of government at its finest, they create a problem and then they come to the rescue. They create a cost and then they come to the rescue and pretend that they, the government, are so generous in helping you with that cost. Remember one of the impacts of the Climate Commitment Act? It's increasing energy rates. Puget Sound Energy has said as much, a 3% increase for its customers. So the cost to heat your home is higher under the Climate Commitment Act. So the government, generous as it is, Governor Jay Inslee, generous as it is, they're going to help you with that problem.
We're putting several millions of dollars to help people get a check so that they can help you pay your utility bills. It's the right thing to do for hardworking Washingtonians.
This is insane. Think about it. Think independently about this. Take your political labels off, your ideology, put it aside. Nicole, can you play that soundbite one more time for me?
We're putting several millions of dollars to help people get a check so that they can help you pay your utility bills. It's the right thing to do for hardworking Washingtonians.
So the governor creates a program that makes your utility bills more expensive. And then the governor pats himself on the back when he says he's going to send working class Washingtonians a check to help with their energy bills. In what world is that praiseworthy? In what world does that make any sense? We're going to create a problem. We're going to place a burden on you. And then we, the government, are going to rescue them, you from that burden. We're going to remove that burden from your shoulders. That's the way a government acts when it wants people to be truly dependent on them. That's the way a government acts when it wants people to believe that the government is the key to your success and your well-being and your happiness. Even if it's the government that's contributing to your burdens in this life. It's actually pretty sick, if you ask me. So you remember Governor Jay Inslee and the infamous pennies quote, right? So when the Climate Commitment Act was passed, Governor Jay Inslee was asked, hey, you know, it seems like when you start these this cap and trade program, where you auction off these carbon credits, that, you know, economics 101, they're going to pass that along to the consumer and we're going to see higher gas prices. I mean, that's kind of what this is designed to do, right? And when he was presented with that question about, hey, isn't this going to raise gas prices? Here's what the governor said.
This is going to have minimal impact, if any, pennies. We're talking about pennies, potentially.
Pennies. Pennies. And of course, that came back to haunt the governor, because as soon as the auctions began, gas prices went up about 50 cents. And then it became pretty clear, as most common sense people knew, that, yeah, the Climate Commitment Act and the carbon allowances are raising prices at the pump. It's sort of undeniable. So at this press conference today, and the media knew this press conference was going to happen. Like, they had advanced warning about it. And so Nicole and I were sitting here watching it this morning like, he better take questions. He better take questions at this thing. And the media better ask him about some of the negative headlines around the Climate Commitment Act. John Stang, who's an independent reporter, was the first up. And he did try to pin Governor Jay Inslee down on the infamous pennies comment. And here's the governor.
What happened between pennies going up to 26 to 50 cents per gallon?
Well, first off, it isn't that. I strenuously object to that. Look, we have been whipsawed too long by the oil and gas industry, and we need a transparency bill to really find out what's going on. And I'll tell you what's going on. Instead of putting this money into investment in renewable energy, they're putting it into the $200 billion of record profits.
I'm trying to pin you down. You said pennies on a gallon in 2021. Some other Democrats said the same thing. How'd you come to pennies per gallon?
First off, I did not. There was an assessment done by agencies that looked at what had happened in the California cap and trade system. You got to understand, this is fairly unique. We're only the second or third one in the North American continent. They did the best job they could to try to predict what would happen.
They did the best job they could to try to predict what would happen. So Governor Jay Inslee, when asked about the fact that he wrongly predicted that this would have negligible impact on gas prices, that it would amount to pennies, if that, per gallon. When asked about that, his excuse is to blame the people with the state who tried to predict what the impact would be. And he says they did the best job they could. That's interesting because his answer there comes on the heels of a lawsuit from a former WashDOT employee whose job it was to predict what the impact on gas prices would be. And you'll remember what he predicted. He predicted that it would raise gas prices per gallon about 45 to 50 cents. And what happened to him for making the best prediction he could as a 30-year economist? He claims that he was told by his bosses with the Washington State Department of Transportation to shut up about it, to leave it out of his reports. His life was made so miserable that he decided to resign. They moved his job to a different agency entirely, one that was more closely affiliated and had more close oversight from the governor. So here you have Governor Jay Inslee, when asked about his pennies prediction, which was just demonstrably wrong, he blames it on incorrect forecasts from people who work for the state of Washington who do that kind of stuff, when we know that there was a state economist now suing the state who says he made what turned out to be a dead accurate forecast and he was told by his bosses to leave it alone. And you want me to believe the governor didn't know about that? So he can now conveniently blame his pennies guess on the bad work and bad predictions of state economists when there was a state economist who has the proof that his forecast was that it would raise gas prices as much as 50 cents a gallon. And he was told, don't put that in your reporting. Nicole, can you play that clip again? Because in the context of what I just told you, what we know to be true, listen to that answer from the governor again.
What happened between pennies going up to 26 to 50 cents per gallon?
Well, first off, it isn't that. I strenuously object to that. Look, we have been whipsawed too long by the oil and gas industry, and we need a transparency bill to really find out what's going on. And I'll tell you what's going on. Instead of putting this money into investment in renewable energy, they're putting it into the $200 billion of record profits.
I'm trying to pin you down. You said pennies on a gallon in 2021. Some other Democrats said the same thing. How'd you come to pennies per gallon?
First off, I did not. There was an assessment done by agencies that looked at what had happened in the California cap and trade system. You got to understand this is fairly unique. We're only the second or third one in the North American continent. They did the best job they could to try to predict what would happen.
So not only does the governor, again, blame it on economists when we know there was a state economist who made an accurate prediction, the state just chose not to listen to that prediction and try to stifle that prediction, but the governor has the audacity to say, we need transparency here in prices. You know, they're pushing for this transparency in pricing bill to hold big gas and oil companies, private enterprise, accountable. We want to know how they're spending there. We want to know the details. They are covering things up. When there have been multiple stories in the past month about Governor Jay Inslee, his administration, his political allies blatantly covering things up related to the climate, related to their climate agenda. Again, I feel the need to rehash them one by one. The King 5 investigators story that looked at the fact that Governor Jay Inslee has missed all his climate goals, and that the state website created to track those goals got rid of information about the goals. That's a cover-up. The Puget Sound Energy story, where Puget Sound Energy went to the State Utilities and Transportation Commission and said, hey, we have to raise energy rates for our customers because of the Climate Commitment Act, and we want to put it as a line item on the bill so we can be transparent. And what did the State Utilities and Transportation Commission decide, acting on the advice from the Attorney General's office? Oh, that you shouldn't put it as a line item. We should study that idea more. That'll just be too confusing for people. Again, that's a cover-up. And then you bring it full circle to the whistleblower with the State Department of Transportation who says he was asked not to relay to the powers that be a very accurate prediction of the impact that all of this would have on gas prices. And after all of that, which isn't coming from Inslee's political foes, we're talking about Two King Five investigator story, the most left-leaning TV station in the state. And then we're talking about a public hearing that played out before our very eyes about Puget Sound Energy. So after all of that, three concrete examples at least about a lack of transparency, about lies, and about a cover-up. And what does Governor Jay Inslee say we need to do to get to the bottom of all of this? We need to make big gas and oil be accountable and be transparent. For the love, you cannot make this stuff up. And this is why on this show, it's not about telling you what to think. It's about giving you the facts, giving you the information, giving you the context you need to think independently. Because I believe that when you think independently, you'll see this for what it is. One big fat scam. A money grab. You go back to that clip earlier of Inslee saying, hey, I know that my Climate Commitment Act raised rates for you guys, energy rates, but we're going to write checks to you guys to help with energy prices. You did that to us. Now you're going to write us a check with what? Our own money? This man is wild. This is crazy. I'll also note one more thing. There were only, we believe, three reporters in the room, which is indicative of the sad state of the media. I mean, an opportunity to ask Governor Jay Inslee face to face about some of these criticisms of his actions around the Climate Commitment Act. Because only three asked questions, and then they went back to the first one, and the governor only took four questions total. So one of the questions, I believe this is Matt Markovich, sounds like his voice. He asked Governor Jay Inslee about the initiative that is going to the legislature in less than a month that would repeal the carbon pricing program. And he asked Governor Jay Inslee what he would say to people who feel inclined to support that initiative because they're being stuck with these higher prices. Their budgets are really hurting. That is a legitimate question. It is a question and an opportunity for the governor to make a case based on the facts and the merits. Well, watch what the governor does instead of answering the question.
What do you say to the people who really want to back that, believing that you are taxing the people who can least afford it with this, and that the oil companies are passing on this tax to the consumer? What argument would you address, in your words, to those people who really want to back that initiative to repeal the CCA?
Well, let me show you, instead of telling you, let me show you what I would say to those people. Why don't all you kids come on up here? Can you guys come on up here? That's a pretty good question. What would I say to those people who want to allow the oil and gas industry to pollute to their heart's content for as many years as they want and put their toxic gases into the atmosphere of the state of Washington? What would I say to them? What I would say to them, these kids, when they're 72 years of age, like I am, will have a Washington state where there's some trees that haven't burned down, where they can breathe because forest fire smoke has not ruined their lungs, where their mom and dad got little help financially with their utility bills, where they can drive, get to on a school bus that's electric and drive for free. What I would say to them is these kids deserve those things.
Shameful. When posed with a reasonable question about the impact that his climate policies are having today on working class people in this state, instead of answer, Governor Jay Inslee chooses to turn around, gather up a bunch of little kids, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds, trot them out in front of him as little political pawns. That's pretty gross. And it's not the first time the governor has done something like that when faced with a difficult question that he simply cannot answer. You remember back in September, we were reporting on the fact that Governor Jay Inslee's right-of-way initiative, the initiative that is spending millions of dollars to remove homeless encampments from state right-of-ways along highways. Remember we reported that we crunched the data that the state had actually put out there, and we found out that it was costing more than $1 million per homeless person to get them out of homelessness? And our friend Jonathan Cho went down to one of these dog and pony shows that the governor was holding, and Jonathan Cho asked him a really important question. How do you justify that cost? And here's what the governor did.
How do you justify that price tag, Governor?
I want to tell you something, that last question. How do I justify the fact that we're making an investment to clean up these encampments? I'll tell you how I justify it. These people are working their fannies off, and they're doing great work, and they got families at home, and every single one of them like to eat, and they like to pay their rent, and we need to pay them, and we don't expect them to do it for free. They're hardworking people.
So transparent. So phony. Rather than answer a question about, hey, why are you spending more than $1 million per person to get them out of homelessness, which is a legitimate question by any stretch of the imagination, the governor goes out and he gets these people that they're paying probably minimum wage to clean up these encampments, and he tries to manipulate people's emotions into forgetting that their program is a failure, into deflecting a question from the media. The same thing he did this morning by getting a bunch of little kids to stand in front of him, between him and the media, so he could manipulate people's emotions to deflect from a legitimate question about the reality for working class people in this state. And need I remind you, and we've said this before, I think everyone cares about the environment. I think the vast majority of people want to make sure that this planet of ours is going to be host to us for a very long time. We care about the planet that we're leaving behind for our kids. But it is not caring about the planet to push through policies that bring in billions of dollars to the state coffers that then result in no net improvement to the climate goals that you yourself put forward. That's not caring about the environment. That's not caring about the climate. That's fraud. That's failure. And if people really cared about these goals, if Democratic lawmakers really cared about these goals, if those kids at that community center this morning really care about those goals, they would all be looking at Governor Jay Inslee and asking him, why aren't you doing better? Like I said at the beginning, I have seen very few things like that. This is damage control from a governor who knows that more and more members of the public are waking up to what is happening around the Climate Commitment Act and the fact that if we have capable, competent leaders, we should be able to come up with policies that can improve the environment while not making life difficult for working class people. All right, we're going to have another story on this topic coming up in our next segment. Unreal proposal to improve the environment, again, at the expense of working class people. But first, we've been talking about the real struggle for landlords under some of these strict landlord-tenant laws. In fact, we've got a story coming up on that later in the show. Seattle, Tacoma voters just passed through Measure 1, which has these insane burdens placed on landlords in a way that's going to make it very difficult for them to continue to rent out units. Our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com, not only does he help home sellers, but he also is a small landlord himself. And he says, man, the struggle right now is real.
We continue to see more and more aggressive landlord-tenant laws being passed in favor of the tenant rights. Like you go down to Tacoma, we are practically back at those, you know, COVID anti-eviction restrictions with what they have passed down there if you really want to jump through the hoops and work the system. Except what's not available right now is the help for landlords should one of those people choose not to pay. And I'm saying choose not to pay because there are plenty of people who are choosing not to pay. It's not that they can't, they choose not to.
Yeah, and so the question is, what is this going to mean for our rental market at a time when there's not a lot of affordable housing as it is, and then you're putting small landlords out of business with some of these policies? Wes says they saw that in Seattle. I mean, at West Jones & Associates, he said when the Seattle policies got more and more strict after COVID, they saw a lot of people just putting those houses up for sale, and he says time will tell if that happens in Tacoma. So if you end up putting your house up for sale, or you just want some advice on what's going on if you have some of these rental units, or maybe you have one house that you're just renting out, reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, the following segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. And man, is this next story frustrating. So many things that need to be focused on this coming up, this upcoming legislative session. You know, we're still in the middle of a homeless crisis. We have a drug crisis that's getting worse by the day. We do have an affordability crisis. We have all these costs on working class people that are just mounting. There is so much to focus on. I mean, the crime crisis. And then I look at some of these bills being introduced and I just think, is that where we're spending our time and our energy? Again, making life more difficult for the working class and for the poor, making people jump through hoops to fulfill climate policies that have shown to not be successful for a government that has shown incapable of even meeting its climate goals. So there is a bill that has just been proposed that would ban all small gas engines. So if you are big into yard work, which I don't know about you, my husband uses that as a stress reliever. If he's stressed, he's out there, he's leaf blowing, he's doing his thing, he's improving the yard. So Washington State legislator Amy Wallen, a Democrat from Kirkland, she's introduced a bill that would prohibit new gas-powered outdoor equipment beginning in 2026. So these are things like lawnmowers that run on gas, log splitters, leaf blowers, pressure washers, stump grinders, wood chippers, snow blowers. If it runs on gas, it would be banned by 2026 in Washington state. It says small gas engines pollute. This is an article from Capitol Press. Small gas engines pollute and contribute to climate change, according to House Bill 1868, filed by Rep. Amy Wallen of Kirkland. A ban would have other benefits, according to the bill. Wallen's bill would allow federal, state, and local governments to use gas-powered equipment to fight fires, clean up oil spills, and respond to other emergencies. So, I mean, you can't use them, but the government could use them to respond to an emergency. I mean, God forbid you need to get out of your driveway to, I don't know, go pick up your child from school or respond to some sort of personal emergency, you better not bust out that gas-powered snowblower, because what would the punishment be? And this is the thing about this that really gets me. Others caught violating the ban would be subject to a $10,000 fine and 1 year in jail. Think, I want you to wrap your mind around that for a second. All of the crimes in our state that seem to be going completely unpunished. People who are repeat users of the criminal justice system, who are stealing cars, who go in front of a judge, get cut loose, oh, don't worry about bail, go out and reoffend, who get just slaps on the wrist. And Democrats have the audacity to propose a bill that would fine you up to $10,000 and maybe even put you in jail for a year for using something powered on gas to do yard work at your house. I mean, come on. And I laugh about it, but this has real implications that I highly doubt have been considered by Democrats in this. And it goes back to low and middle income people in our state who are just trying to earn a living. What if you're a small landscaping company? I see them in my neighborhood all the time. We've had landscapers come over on occasion. People who, you know, are just barely getting by, who are working really hard. they would have to buy all new equipment for their business. Is the government going to help with that? Do you know how expensive that would be for some of these small businesses?
Well, to be clear, they don't. It's new equipment. So they wouldn't have to buy new, but when they replace their old equipment,
exactly,
it would have to be plugged into people's houses. So most landscapers jump out of their truck and they do their work and they like get to it because they don't have to impose their, you know, whatever on the homeowners. You don't have to have somebody there to open the garage so you could plug something in the inside or outside or whatever. But now they would have to, you know, find somebody else's electric source.
I mean, and we can use a gas generator.
Or maybe a gas generator.
But you
exactly.
know what I mean? I mean, you know, we can have, to me, you know, debates and disagreements mm-hmm. about the impact that gas-powered leaf blowers or whatever it is has on the environment. But I think there's a whole separate thing here about mm-hmm. priorities, about your priorities being really off kilter.
Right.
And about, again, you're trying to solve one problem by creating a bunch of other problems, mm-hmm. which to me isn't the way. You know, I think good government, if that's something you really think is important, incentivize it.
Right.
Give these businesses incentives if they are willing to or able to change their gas-powered fleet over to, you know, something that plugs into a wall.
Right. But again, what do we have in California and in Denver, I think it was, that we had rolling, or they shut down people's power because there was not enough energy. And now we're going to make people by 2030 or whatever it is have electric cars, electric appliances, electric outdoor blowers and whatever else. And it's going to be too much.
Yeah. And this is, like you said, it's new purchases of chainsaws, rototillers, mm-hmm. log splitters. But when you're running a landscaping business, you're going through that stuff frequently. Right. When you're doing, you know, 3, 4, 5 houses a day, mm-hmm. you are having to buy new equipment frequently. Is it going to be as cost effective? You know, and I think mm-hmm. it's government overregulation at its worst. Mm-hmm. So there's a priority issue here. And there's also this idea of, can you really not come up with environmental policies that will, one, make a difference, and two, don't also hurt the working class? If the only policies you can come up with are ones that make life more difficult for people who are barely getting by financially, you need to get a little bit more creative right. with
and
your policies.
Stop it. This is not making a difference. This is just silliness.
This is insane. This and I will tell this representative, who again represents mm-hmm. Kirkland has a lot of other issues as well that you could be laser focused on rather than trying to make sure that people plug their snow blower into the wall as opposed to put gasoline in it. It's really wild stuff. It says a lot about their priorities. All right, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, our segment Unbelievable coming up next. We're going to tell you why being a mom and pop landlord is just racist, because apparently everything's racist these days. First, if you are reevaluating your family's budget here heading into the new year, it might be a good time to reevaluate your insurance. If you've been using the same big box insurance company for years, if you have to call and you get a phone tree every time that you have to make a claim, I highly recommend setting some time aside soon to do the FirstMark Challenge. FirstMark Insurance Group, local company, they've been in the business for a long time, and their services are absolutely free. Mike and I took the FirstMark Challenge in the spring. We went to them and said, hey, we're underinsured. We know as a couple we're underinsured, but we don't want to add on to our insurance bill. What can you do for us? They went out, they found us better insurance for the same price. And again, we never paid them anything. Now we're members of the FirstMark family. We're very, very happy with the service they provide. Dave Taylor is the CEO of FirstMark, and he says that the FirstMark Challenge obviously is great, but don't expect to get some quote back from them in 15 minutes or less.
How much time did it take for you?
Couple hours.
Okay. So
total.
All in a couple hours yep. from the time we gather the information, do the presentation and go through mm-hmm. everything, it's a couple hours of time.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and I would say that's probably on the high end.
Yeah.
Right.
It ranges. We were chatty. We were very chatty.
A little chatty. Yes, exactly. Anywhere from an hour to 2 hours is the investment in time to find out. And there's no obligation. There's no extra fees if you become a FirstMark client. We are paid the same way every other insurance agency in the state of Washington is paid. We're paid by the insurance company that is the writer of your business. And so, yeah, there's nothing to lose.
Yeah, nothing to lose. It is a little bit of a time investment, but I think it'll pay dividends in the long run. You know, every single year, First Mark Insurance is going to look at Mike and I's insurance, make sure we are up to date, that we have what we need. But they're also going to go out and see, hey, can we get them what they have now for less money? Can we save them a little bit of money? And they're doing that proactively. We don't have to do a thing. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Set aside some time to take the First Mark Challenge. Maybe you can save a little money in the new year. Lord knows that everyone needs to find ways right now to save a little money. All right, Public Cola, which is a progressive Seattle news entity, has something to say about this phrase that we use frequently on the show. Mom and pop landlords, they say that is nothing more than a racist dog whistle. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. If you're a small landlord, you're probably white, heterosexual, and just absolutely racist, according to Public Cola. The headline in an article on Public Cola, no, renter protections aren't driving out mom and pop landlords, which is really interesting because we have spoken to small landlords that are leaving places like Seattle and Tacoma. So I know that Public Cola is going to get into all, oh, what the University of Washington has to say about it, but that doesn't compete with what we're actually being told from people who are putting their units on the market. So I digress. But then it makes this all about race, which again, oh, this is a racial argument. Do you have, Nicole, the one before this? Sorry. Okay. There it is. It says there's a strong racial undercurrent to the mom and pop narrative and the two laws that were the focus of this study, again, university study. The laws are intended to prevent discrimination, both systematic, as in blanket refusals to rent to anyone with a criminal record, and informal, as when a landlord selects among a pool of applicants based on a gut sense of who will be a good tenant. Both these practices can enable landlords to reject applicants based on race without having to acknowledge, even to themselves, what they're doing. So if you are a white landlord, you're inherently racist. And even if you don't think you're racist, you are racist and you won't acknowledge it to yourself. I mean, think about that. Both of these practices can enable landlords to reject applicants based on race without having to acknowledge, even to themselves, what they're doing. Well, thank God that the government is there to protect you racist landlords from yourselves and your inherent internalized racism. The Public Cola article goes out to say the very phrase mom and pop is fraught. Michelle Thomas, director of policy and advocacy at Washington Low Income Housing Alliance, calls it a racist dog whistle. Quote, I really do think the image it invokes is heterosexual white older couples. And they're trying to say, think about these people and think about who a tenant is and who do you think needs protection? I mean, it never ceases to amaze me with these progressives, the lengths they will go to and the fake scenarios they'll create in their mind to be offended. And you do not have to look very hard to completely prove the thesis of this article wrong. I mean, we talked to Jason Roth, who he's not an older heterosexual couple that's, you know, got all this money and they're just trying to turn away black people. Jason Roth is, how old is Jason? 30 years old, I think, like around 30.
He was right around there, maybe a little bit.
He goes out in his mid-20s trying to find a fixer-upper, finds one in South Seattle, gets all his friends to help fix it up so he can rent it out, ends up renting out, you know, affordable rooms to people. And who does he rent to? He rents it to a black man. Didn't think twice about it. And then what happened? His tenant ended up never paying him rent. Jason Roth hasn't collected any money from him in months. He's now locked in this prolonged legal battle because of the tenant protections. So is Jason Roth some sort of, is he a racist dog whistle? No, he rented to a black man. And it just happened to be that that black man never paid him rent. So again, you know, this whole idea that they want to go to some researchers. Hey, researchers, can you look into this idea of mom and pop landlords and try to see, you know, if the narrative that's being painted by people like Brandy Cruz is actually true or is it just a racist dog whistle? Rather than, I don't know, do the hard work. Go out and talk to mom and pop landlords. Go out and talk to people who have one rental unit or two or maybe even five. Who, that's their only income. That's what they rely on, maybe for retirement. Go talk to people like Jason Roth and hear their stories firsthand. But you refuse to do that because you know it will not support the argument that you're trying to make, which is an argument based on identitarianism, which is all that the progressive left has left. If they don't like it, if they want to push a policy and you're opposed to it, you're racist. You're sexist. You're a homophobe, whatever it is. And that's when I know that we're on the right track. When the only argument against it is calling you racist or using some label to scare you out of pushing back against it. So it's just absolutely unbelievable, but it is not a surprise given the publication. All right, before we get to national news, I've been talking about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. I lost 37 pounds before my wedding in the fall, and I'm so glad that I took the initiative last year to start the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. You know, I've done a lot of up and down diets. I've been able to maintain my weight loss for about a year, and I think the nice thing about it is it allows you to enjoy holidays. It allows you to enjoy gatherings, etc. I mean, I had a couple holiday parties over the weekend, and you don't feel like, oh, I got to be miserable because my diet is so strict. What it does is helps you lose your excess weight quickly, and then it helps you keep that weight off in a way where it still acknowledges that this is real life and that you have to be able to enjoy it sometimes. And that's why I found success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. There's no prepackaged meals, there's no counting calories, no drugs or injections, no strenuous workout routines. So do what I did, what so many others have done. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Okay, dipping into national news, I had to talk about this story because we didn't discuss it last week, and what we're seeing is pretty remarkable. I guess the one time when universities go too far in their woke BS is when they allow blatant anti-Semitism on college campuses. So if this had to be the line that got crossed, well, maybe it'll result in a little bit of pullback about some of these political and social agendas in schools. So you probably heard, and I'll play a clip momentarily, about the congressional hearing where you had the head of Harvard, MIT, UPenn, and they were being questioned about some of this blatant anti-Semitism that they have allowed to proliferate on their campuses. And so in light of the pushback from donors, from the public, the president and the board chair at the University of Pennsylvania, so Elizabeth McGill, the president, and Scott Bach, the chairman of the board of trustees, they've resigned. And they've said, okay, we're resigning, we're stepping down. As I said, that came in light of the congressional testimony, which I'll play a clip from momentarily because you'll understand just how bad it was. And that has led to now pressure for not only the head of MIT, but the head of Harvard to resign as well. And I don't know if that's going to happen, but when you're losing money at these universities, that's the part where a board of trustees isn't going to allow it to go on for much longer. And that's, I mean, they're being hurt in their pocketbook. If the absolute disgusting nature of some of the anti-Semitism wasn't enough to wake them up, losing money sure will. And so Claudine Gay at Harvard, there's this huge effort to try. So there's like this letter being sent out by some alums and some current students to try to keep her in place. But I think it really comes down to the people who are giving Harvard money and whether they're going to tolerate it or not. But I want to play just one of the clips that I think led to a lot of this pushback. So again, this is the president of the University of Pennsylvania, Elizabeth McGill, under questioning in a congressional hearing. And her answers were pretty horrifying.
At Penn, does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Penn's rules or code of conduct? Yes or no?
If the speech turns into conduct, it can be harassment. Yes.
I am asking, specifically calling for the genocide of Jews, does that constitute bullying or harassment?
If it is directed and severe or pervasive, it is harassment.
So the answer is yes.
It is a context-dependent decision, Congresswoman.
It's a context-dependent decision. That's your testimony today. Calling for the genocide of Jews is depending upon the context. That is not bullying or harassment. This is the easiest question to answer yes, Ms. McGill. So is your testimony that you will not answer yes?
If it is, if the speech becomes,
no.
If the speech becomes conduct, it can be harassment, yes.
Conduct meaning committing the act of genocide? The speech is not harassment? This is unacceptable, Ms. McGill. I'm going to give you one more opportunity for the world to see your answer. Does calling for the genocide of Jews violate Penn's code of conduct when it comes to bullying and harassment? Yes or no?
it can be harassment?
The answer is yes.
Insane. Absolutely insane. You would never see that kind of, bulking at any sort of, at questions directed toward the harassment of any sort of other group of people individually on a campus. I've said this before, at the University of Washington, where we've seen these anti-Semitic pro-Hamas rallies, I had wondered why Governor Jay Inslee and Attorney General Bob Ferguson, two of the most high-profile alums of UW, what they would do if it were white supremacists who were on campus, you know, calling to kill black people. Like, what would you do? Of course you would be there, as you should, as high-profile alums saying, this is not right, this is not what we stand for. But when it's Jewish students, when it's Israel, it's like, it's totally fine. And so, I mean, not a surprise that the UPenn president resigned after that. I mean, or that school was going to go broke, bankrupt. And if money is what has to wake people up, then so be it. I did have to note and just kind of laugh quickly at an article in the New York Times. It was an opinion piece, but the way it's framed is just so typical. So typical. The headline, as fury erupts over campus anti-Semitism, conservatives seize the moment. So this is all about, oh, conservatives are using this failure from the left and from progressives as an opportunity to score political points. Republicans have been attacking elite universities for years. After a tense congressional hearing last week, many on the left are joining them. Republicans, conservatives seize the moment. Maybe it's not seizing the moment as much as it is being on the right side of history. And that's where they are. They're on the right side of history. And so it doesn't surprise me that there are also a lot of Democrats and people on the left who want to be on the right side of history as well. Not for some political purpose, not because they're trying to score political points, because it's the morally correct thing to speak out against the genocide of Jews, to speak out about what's happening on our college campuses. It doesn't always have to be a political agenda. And when the New York Times says Republicans have been attacking elite universities for years, you wonder why. It's because they knew an environment existed where stuff like this is okay, where you have these political and social agendas that have absolutely infiltrated higher education, that have made the actual education kids are supposed to be going there to get less and less valuable in the real world. And so there's a reason why, you know, you have some on the left who, this is the first time they've ever been critical of what's happening on our college campuses. The first time ever. They're like, wow, this sort of stuff is allowed on college campuses? Yeah, it has been for a long time. It might not have been blatant anti-Semitism calls for the genocide of Jewish people, but there's been a lot of hate. There's been a lot of divisive political talk happening on college campuses, and that's why it has been a target of conservatives for some time. I did make this the subject of our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon and Locals. I said University of Pennsylvania's president and board chair have resigned amid fallout from a congressional hearing on college campus anti-Semitism. Do you believe we are witnessing a turning point in higher education? I said yes for the worse, yes for the better, or no. And a lot of you are saying that you do see this potentially being a positive turning point for higher education. Some of you are saying this isn't going to change a thing, which I think time will tell on that. Michelle says higher ed will move very slowly unless federal funding is withheld, and it should be. Certain Uncertainty says getting rid of staff, no matter how high up the food chain, doesn't get rid of the culture. A new figurehead will take their place and the cycle will continue. Ron Williamson says, I can hope it's the beginning of change, but honestly, I don't think so. Until you hit these institutions in the pocketbook, like I said, nothing will change. Also, until you hold the radical students accountable for their actions, nothing will change. Yeah, did you see, gosh, we should have played this clip. There was a clip over the weekend of UW students taking over the president's office, and police came in there eventually to drag him out, and the kids were losing it. Like, what? You're arresting us? Like, they were, their minds were blown at the fact that they were going to be placed under arrest for this. And it just shows they don't expect any consequences for their actions. Of course not. There's all these videos on Instagram, like, oh, cops, SPD, a bunch of pigs, you know, pulling us out. And there was one video, I don't know if you saw this, Nicole, we'll pull it for the show tomorrow, where it was like these, the cops were trying to pry them apart because they were locked in their arms and their legs. And somebody sitting across in the circle was taking a video, and it said on it, share this everywhere. I was like, yeah, okay, share the, they thought share this everywhere because people will be like, oh, the cops are evil. Or people like me share it and say, kids are awful, awful, awful humans that just need to be shown that there are consequences for their actions. Okay, before we get to questions and comments from the live stream, we talked to Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital on the show last Thursday about a prediction that there is going to be a bubble burst in the commercial real estate space, how you have, you know, really low office occupancy that has sort of persisted after the pandemic, and you have a lot of these office buildings that are on these five-year cycles where they're going to come up, the interest rates are really high, so they're going to have to write down the value of these. We asked him about, you know, what that means for us. If we have some sort of burst in the commercial real estate market, should that indicate something to us about the economy?
You know, that's one of the reasons that we're just kind of looking at this market and looking at all these people talking about a great economy. And it's not that it's so bad, but there's just so many structural issues coming to a head at one time. And the market is clearly not paying attention. Mainstream media is clearly not paying attention. And I think it's kind of part and partial to us as a culture now. Why does everybody feel confident about the economy? There's one reason. It's the stock market. And that's all anybody's looking at. Right. And you're just like, OK, well, just so you guys know, the prices you're seeing in the stock market are ridiculous.
Yeah. So he's kind of trying to, and I appreciate this from him, because what he's saying is don't just look at the stock market for your indicator of whether the economy is going to tank in 2024. It's all these issues we've been talking about. It's the defaults on credit cards that we're seeing. It is all the money that was dumped into the economy and the crazy inflation. It is the commercial real estate market, where that might not impact you personally, but it's one of the dominoes that is all stacking up to potentially fall. So it's an important time to manage your risk before it's too late. The wrong time to manage your risk in your retirement portfolio, everything you worked hard for, is after we see the economy tank. That is the wrong time to do it. Zach, on his weekly radio show, knowyourriskradio.com, he talks about all of these stuff, so you're not caught flat-footed. You can also reach out to him for some investment advice and learn how Bulwark Capital specializes in risk management. All right, questions and comments from the live stream. Angie says, Nicole, you want to join us for questions and comments today?
Of course.
Of course. Angie says, I'm just so sick of the taxes. It's as if Democrats have no brain power to figure out how to do things without taxing the ever-living you-know-what out of everyone. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, too, they don't need the money. We don't need the money. Our budget has ballooned so much comparative to growth in our state. And so that's the thing that I think bothers me even more. They could do a lot of these programs if they want to with the money they already have. Mm-hmm. They don't need to find new revenue streams. They don't need to be having these carbon auctions. I mean, I know they want to have the offsets so they reduce pollution or whatever it is, but then it just hurts us. And so that's, I think, what bothers me more than anything, is they refuse to just spend your money wisely.
So Greg Anderson says, we should, as citizens, see about getting him impeached by the citizenry. What would a citizen's arrest?
What about a citizen's arrest?
I know it can't be done, but it should be done.
I mean, honestly, I would say if Governor Inslee was at the beginning of a term, I don't think it would be out of the realm of reasonableness right now to recall him. Mm-hmm. Because of, especially if the whistleblower thing, you know, goes to court and this individual is awarded, you know, something like he wins his case. But to me, there's enough there to say that there's misfeasance and malfeasance. He blatantly lied, and it's just all these dominoes stacking up. So if he weren't, you know, 11 months left in his, a year left in his term, maybe it'd be different. But
and that's because I think that I don't know if we talked about this last week, but it would be a time taken away from other things in the legislation process, right? Isn't that what it was? That's why you wouldn't do it this late?
Well, I mean, there's a lot going on next year. It's a big election year. You have all these initiatives. You have the legislative session. And so maybe it's just like too many things.
Yeah, maybe it's worth it.
I don't know. Julie says, so they're going to buy votes again, this time with a check for your energy bill, a Band-Aid, only so they'll vote the way they want them to. And then they'll be stuck paying the higher rates forever after a little bailout Band-Aid. And we'll put this on the show tomorrow because I forgot about this as well, but it reminded me of it. Bob Ferguson won this case against for price fixing, chicken price fixing.
Right.
And he is sending out checks, like $50 checks to some low-income Washingtonians. I guarantee they're his name on it. The envelope, they put a picture of what the envelope will look like so that when you get it, you know it's legit. And it's from the office of the attorney general. And so it's like, remember when Trump did that? Remember when Trump did that? I think it was with the first stimulus check, right? Where it was his name and his signature, and the left lost it. Like, oh, he's trying to act like this is his money. It's personally from him. Bob Ferguson's doing it with the chicken money.
Yeah, you know? Where's the outrage?
And Inslee's going to do it with the, oh, take a check for the energy prices that we increased for you.
If you get one of those, let us know.
No moral consistency. No moral consistency. No. It's insane. Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, let's see.
My nose itches. Sorry, guys. If you're watching the stream, it itches so bad.
Allergies?
Maybe.
Chris DeLong eliminates vehicle emissions testing program, claims to be the climate advocate king. So much irony here. We could have a skyscraper built with it.
Look, if he was like left and right, reaching goals, all this stuff, I'd still be critical about the impact they have on people who are struggling financially. I think you ought to be able to get creative, put a lot of power in the hands of the private sector to do some of these things. Of course, you have to get other nations, you have to get other states on board. Like, we're not going to make a bunch of difference here. But he's not meeting the goals anyway. So he's just taking a bunch of money, giving it out to his political allies to do stuff that's not working. Why are we celebrating this man? Why are we celebrating this man?
He's trying.
I tried my best. Oh,
that's it. I mean, that's what we do. We give people awards for trying.
Governor Inslee, I tried my best. But he didn't. He didn't try his best. Country guy, what a coward. He's hiding behind the kids. Despicable. Literally hiding behind the children. Like 6-year-olds. Thomas Brendelson, bringing those kids on stage as a pawn is incredibly sleazy. And Heidi asks, why are those kids not in school?
True story.
Wait, there's school today, right?
Yes.
It's Monday.
Yes.
Too early for a holiday. Is it some weird holiday I don't know about?
Nope. Not that I know of.
It's not Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Day, which will be coming to a state near you, I'm sure, next year.
But I know that people I know are going to school today.
You know, the sad thing is the parents let them do that. I mean, those kids aren't there without their parents.
I'm sure they encouraged it.
Yes.
They chose it. Kids wouldn't know.
Listen, parental rights.
They don't know what they're doing.
Do what you want to do. All right, keep going, Nicole. Chug it along.
Okay, sorry, I got off my screen here.
Oh, I'll
Let's see. Gas-powered ban. Kathy Carr says they will encourage people to snitch on their neighbor, of course.
You know how dumb it looks, though? Like, okay, let me undivided, Brandy. Undivided.
There won't be cops running around seeing if people are using
Well, that's
these.
The thing. And I'm not saying I really think that people are actually going to go to jail for a year. But as a Democrat, when you're pushing back against and trying to actually pushing through laws that will mean violent criminals spend less time incarcerated, and then you have the audacity to push through a law punishable by a year in jail for using a gas-powered lawn care device, that's some pretty hypocritical, insane stuff. I would love to see the cop who'd arrest someone for that and the judge who'd sentence them to a year in jail. I just don't know that that's realistic. It's a complete waste of time. JC Luckley says, since law enforcement has been defunded, they won't be able to enforce the small engines ban. Yeah, that's true. But the other thing is, I've seen the people with the plug-in lawnmower. Like, that's crazy. And it's like the cord's just all like in the way and stuff. What happens if you run over the cord, by the way?
I think it's toast.
It's just toast, right? You might get electrocuted.
Yeah.
That's I'm scary sure stuff.
Yeah, that is scary.
But it's not realistic. It's not feasible. I've seen people with the little battery powered ones, and they blow like 2 leaves at a time. It's like, that'll take you like 10 hours to leaf blow your lawn. I actually do prefer the good old fashioned raking.
Yeah,
it's good exercise.
I gotta say, I blew off my patio the other day, and it was cathartic.
That's just nice. Sweep it right. Look,
so
I would rather you do a rake mandate than a gas-powered lawn ban. A rake mandate, get some kids in the neighborhood, go rake that thing up. I don't want to see you guys out there with your sad plug-in leaf blowers. Depressing.
The time thing, too, because, I mean, if you're trying to clear the drains, things like that, it's going to take a while if you're having a rake or scoop. I mean, it's on pavement, and that's not rakeable.
Just ridiculous.
Stop it.
We send these people there. We elect them and send them there. You send them to represent your communities.
Not our people.
And this is what they do.
People that watch our show don't send these people. This is what they do.
That's wild stuff. Like, good for you. Really looking out for people. All right. Let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? I'll keep it short today. I just want to reiterate, you know, because our audience is growing by the day. And so I want to make sure that I'm always reiterating sort of what the goal is. Because we do an opinion show, and it's easy to think that the goal is to make you feel the way we feel about the governor or the Climate Commitment Act or the initiatives or whatever it is. You know, I always am going to have strong opinions on those things, but that's not the goal of the show at all. The goal of the show is to get people to think for themselves. That's really what I want. And if you look at all the available evidence out there, you look at the facts, you do your research, and you don't think the way I do about something, that's great. I would love for you to watch the show anyway. I'd love for you to be part of Undivided anyway, because it's really about prying people from these political and ideological echo chambers, where if they're a fan of Governor Inslee, he says something, must be true. They're a fan of Donald Trump, he says something, must be true. It's not healthy for our state. It's not healthy for our country, this obedience to ideology, this obedience to political party. Now, I do tend to think on the Climate Commitment Act issue that when you look at all the available evidence, you'll see it for the nonsense and for the fraud that it is, like we do. But that's all this is ever about. You know, I hope that you guys disagree with me 50% of the time. And I want to hear from you when you disagree with me. I want to hear why you disagree with me. I want to hear the information and the sources and the facts and the data that you're looking to that brings you to a conclusion where you disagree with me. Because this is about growing a population of people who not only think for themselves, but take pride in thinking for themselves. So if that's something that you're interested in doing, we want you here on Undivided, even if you might not think like me. All right, that has been it for today's episode. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Make sure you go check out our episode of Sundays with Subscribers from yesterday. We had on Ali Bradley, News Nation correspondent, with a report from the Southern Border. Southern Border. We also had on Leslie Lou Allen, a candidate for the 3rd Congressional District in Washington. So go check that show out, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com.